RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top.
Wow.
Hey, here's Quick as a mission. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the July 25th episode of the MMA Report podcast. I am Jason Floyd. As always, I am joined by Daniel Galvan. Come here on this week's edition of the podcast. Going to talk about an interesting tweet that was sent out about a former MMA manager in relation to Will Manager Support Project Spearhead. We'll recap what happened on Sunday afternoon over there in Germany at UFC Fight Night 134. We'll get into what happened at PFL 4 last Thursday night, plus get you ready for this weekend's UFC on Fox card in Calgary. We'll have our buy-sell segment, plus we are going to talk about an article about the DAZN monthly fee being double of ESPN+. Plus, no interviews here on this week's edition of the podcast. We'd really love to know, do you guys like this format, or do you kind of like a mix of myself and Daniel plus interviews? I will mention, come up next week on the podcast, going to be doing a special edition of the podcast as I'll be in Orlando for the annual Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports meeting. And on Monday night of next week, I'll be sitting down with Mike Mazzulli, of course, the head of the ABC, also the director of the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations, and Andy Foster, the head of the California State Athletic Commission, plus working on one more executive director to have a roundtable discussion on the regulatory side of the sport. So if you have any questions, comments, topics you want me to bring up, just tweet them at me, at Jason_Floyd. I will tell you some of the questions and topics that are going to come up will be obviously weight cutting, of course, with Andy, with what he's doing. So we'll talk to Andy about that. Also, drug testing, the unified rules of MMA, why this sport is, well, not unified on the regulatory side. So if you do have any questions or comments, definitely let me know. But Daniel, how the hell are you doing, man?
Jason, I'm not doing well. You know, it's not our first point of discussion, but oh my goodness gracious, I feel like I have aged 7 years after watching Sunday morning and evening and afternoon's fight card. Oh my gosh, was that a troubling experience?
Yeah. I watched that fight card via DVR as I was here in the office doing some work. Had the fights on the TV, but didn't have the sound up as we were busy putting together some more furniture here in the office. But yeah, we'll get into everything that happened at UFC Fight Night 134. Of course, do want to mention, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. Rate and review. We'd really appreciate if you would rate and review us there on Apple Podcasts. But I want to start off this week's episode of the podcast by talking about a tweet that I saw from a former MMA manager, and this tweet came from Chuck Weichert, and I believe I pronounced his last name correctly. If I did it, Chuck, I do apologize. And Chuck on his Twitter bio now calls himself a former MMA manager. I didn't realize that he had got out of the MMA management business, but his tweet was this, saying, quote, "How many MMA managers support a union and Project Spearhead? Question mark, question mark, question mark. I know one aside from myself. If you don't, then you don't give a expletive about your fighter's health, only how much money they put in your pocket, plus and being cool with UFC. Do what's right for your athlete, not Dana, hashtag enough BS." And it was a very, I hadn't really not seen any managers talk about this. I can tell you I've had private conversations with a couple managers about this topic. And it made me look up, what do other sports agents make? And this came from the Houston Chronicle, where it says, generally, a sports agent earns between 4 and 10% of an athlete's playing contract, though some leagues place limits on what percentage an agent can charge in commission. For example, the National Football League states that an agent can't receive more than 3% of player salaries. And the one thing I've always said about this, Daniel, and for fans who maybe don't know kind of the numbers that managers charge, I've heard anywhere from 5% to 10%. I've heard as much as 20%, which, quite frankly, if your manager's taking 20% of your purse, you need to really ask yourself, what is your manager doing for 20% of your purse? But that's why it's – because you really haven't seen managers come out and say, oh, I'm all about a union, potentially maybe even Project Spearhead, because I do think that if you saw a union come in and all of a sudden a – agent's fee was capped at 3%, I have a feeling we would see a lot less managers in the game.
So you think, I mean, you've had private discussions with managers. You think, what's the general thought process you've gathered from all these discussions? Do you think they are in favor of maybe getting behind Project Spearhead, or do you get the sense that the potential possibility of that 3% or some type of cap, like generally, when you talk to managers, because it's not like, you know, Twitter isn't the end all be all of the forum. You know, no. Unions were formed before social media. The baseball union didn't need Twitter to get put together. So when you're talking to managers, Jason, what do you kind of glean from that in terms of where their heads are at?
My sense is they all don't think a union will ever happen, which I agree with. I think that it's highly unlikely that we ever see this happen. You know, and that's just, I just don't think that you're going to get enough fighters who are going to jump on it. You know, I mean, yes, you have the Leslie Smiths and the Cajun Johnsons of the world, but, you know, I mean, look, when you're talking about in the UFC of 600 fighters, you need what, I believe it's 30% of the roster has to sign union cards, which that's just not going to happen. You know, look, I think that the good managers in the game, they sit there and they want to do what's best for their fighters. And I think that those people will have no problem with a union if it makes things better for fighters. But, I mean, you can't be naive and think that there are not managers out there who are adamantly against a union because it may not be in their best interest.
Yeah, I think amongst other sports, MMA probably has – MMA is an industry currently that has a real open terrain for managers that don't have their clients' best interests to thrive. It's a developing sport, and there aren't as much institutions as there is. And you know, in the NFL, it makes sense for an agent to get so little of the contract, given that the vast majority of NFL players like literally only get their first contract. And that's pretty hard to, unless you're Saquon Barkley, it's pretty understood where that money's going to be. There isn't much managing there. So it does seem like MMA probably has a lot more questionable managers from an ethical standpoint than other sports. And that's a bit disheartening. I understand the thought process that a union is unlikely, because I think in general, starting a union in an industry where there isn't one is an incredibly difficult task, but it's worth commending those that attempt to get it started, because it's through years upon years of fighting for it and it not panning out that maybe eventually there is a union. And, you know, unions in sports to me are a lot more different than unions in everyday life. You know, I'm not a big union guy when it comes to maybe my own personal occupation within broadcasting in Texas. That's not a thing. But when it comes to fighting, I feel like a union's super important, just because the simple fact of when you look at the payout for what NBA players, MLB players, and NFL players get when it comes to the percentage of money that their leagues get in, you know, they're getting a big chunk of the collective bargaining agreement. The MMA fighters are really, really screwed here when you contrast the percentage of money they get. Not so much the actual sum, when you obviously salaries for baseball players are going to be more than MMA fighters, but it seems like they get a real small percentage. And I think the only way to get that to a more even cut is through a union. That's why I think a union's really valuable and it's worth fighting for, and why a good agent would fight for it.
Look, I would love to know what the initial thought of UFC fighters were when they woke up on Monday morning to realize their boss threw $1 million a birthday party for his 16-year-old son.
I mean, yeah.
You know, there were some fighters that were like, are you kidding me?
Dude, there's so many fighters that have fought several times in the UFC that have significant financial hardships. You know, if you fight for the UFC, Jason, you should not have to start a Kickstarter.
Man.
You should. I mean, and we've seen that, and it's super sad. And it's like, man, maybe if you're Dana White, throw like half of that $1 million to the fighters. You know, it's just and it kind of brings back the comments Brendan Shaw made when they got in that Eskimo brother brawl on the internet, where it's like, Jesus, I don't know, Dana White deserves all this money. And it's like, man, it does seem like fighters really are screwed when it comes to the percentage of money being generated.
You think Brendan Schaub got an invite to that party?
Oh my goodness. Well, they are family, right? We established they're Eskimo brothers.
I saw someone tweeted like, so did his Eskimo uncle get invited?
Yeah, that'd be a really awkward conversation. And the thing is, everything's on social media. That's got to be such a weird thing to see if you're Dana White's kid, right? You're just on Twitter and there's another – like imagine, Jason, when you were 16 or what, however old Dana's child is.
Yeah, 16.
And you read about how your father is in a trash talk and the other guy's saying you and your father are Eskimo brothers. That's just a weird day.
Think gets said to Dana's son in school about that?
Oh, he better. I hope he's popular, man, because if he's not, I mean, oh God, that's just a rough day. But the thing is,
I'm going to guess he's probably the most popular kid in school.
Well, guess what? He's the one handing out the invitations to the $1 million birthday party. If we go back to you in high school, and your father or mother or whatever was going to give you a $1 million birthday party, what would you want that money to go towards? What would you want at your $1 million birthday party?
My bank account.
Oh, you can't do that. You were not making that financially sound decisions at that age, Jason.
We got to spend
it all in one night.
I don't even know. I'd probably throw a concert for my friends.
Yeah.
Bring in the, you know.
The Baja Men or the Baja Boys, who let the dogs out.
Oh, man. Wow. That is. I'm trying to think of my high. When I was going to high school, Eminem was kind of big at that. You know, it just kind of started. So if you would have brought an Eminem into a, you know, 6-year-old Jason birthday party, yeah, I would have had every kid in school would be at my birthday party.
That would be awesome, yeah. I feel like $1 million would not have been enough for Eminem, but maybe it would have. I don't know.
I bet you. Oh, you'd probably you throw him $200,000-$300,000. I bet he'd show up.
Man, I'm a big Eminem guy. I would just throw a wrestling show. You know what? I think I might just have a
actually.
UFC
that's a good one because that was when the NWO was huge.
Yeah. You could just have a WCW show. I feel like if you paid WCW $1 million, they would do a house show. I mean, I bet you could host a UFC event. You could host your own fight card and get it broadcast on DAZN.
Yeah, you could.
You could hire Tony Lopez to fight at your birthday party.
Yeah, but I found that tweet interesting. I saw that. I said, it's kind of interesting. You know, because you did get some likes on the tweet, and it seems like one of these topics that doesn't get talked about in the public forum, but you know, is behind the scenes gets talked about. You know, we mentioned about UFC Fight Night 134. I mentioned I did not watch it live. I feel bad for anyone who watched that event live. A couple of stats on this fight card. Is the first event in UFC history to feature 9 consecutive fights to go to a judge's decision. It ties the UFC record for most decisions with 10. It's tied with UFC 169, UFC Fight Night 36, UFC Fight Night 84, UFC 101, and UFC 121. It's the 6th most total fight time on a fight card. And this summer, by the way, has now featured the 6th, 9th, 10th, and 11th longest events in UFC history. Those other events being the Ultimate Fighter 27 finale, UFC 225, and UFC Fight Night 133. So we've now had back-to-back events here. You know, I think part of the problem, I think, if you're the UFC, is, look, decisions are going to happen. That's out of the UFC's control. But how about we not have 13 fight cards? How about let's only make it 10 at the most?
That's a big problem. I love the 10 fight cards. That was my thought process. And I think there's that, Jason. I think the second thing I would point towards is, God, we don't need to put all these fights on Fox Sports 1. I love the Fight Pass pacing. If we just get 4 hours of TV content, honestly, in a perfect world, 2 hours of TV content per fight card would be amazing. But I'll settle at four. Four-hour cap. We have 4 hour for TV, and everything else will put on Fight Pass, where we just get those guys in the cage and get them out of the cage, in and out, in and out. I would love that. I just think when you're on Fox Sports 1 and you run 10 consecutive decisions on TV with your usual commercials, that really kills the card. But obviously the 13 fight card is a thing, because despite the fact that there are more divisions in the UFC than there ever has been, the amount of fight cards they run – I think allows you to get away with 10 fight cards. I think you can get away with doing 10 fight five cards. And it's just something where, Jason, when we do these recaps, we do these previews, there are so many fights that there are winners that we will not mention. We will not say the name Darko Stosic, despite the fact that he looked great, you know, reminiscent of Mirko Krokop. We don't talk about these guys because they get lost in the shuffle, because there's 13 fights and we got – three fight cards to talk about that just happened and two to preview. And it's just like, these fights just don't seem like they matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the problem. You know, it was another UFC event where it was quantity fights, not quality, you know, and that's a problem. Now on Sunday, late afternoon, when I got home, I don't know, 6-7 o'clock after a long day of work. And I tweeted, going to watch UFC Hamburg fights tonight. How would you rate the card? Would you like to know some of the responses to this, Daniel?
Hit me up. What did they say? Did they love it?
Okay, the first one was 2 out of 10 without the main. Otherwise, 3.5 out of 10. I'm guessing that's a stars. 1 out of 10. There was someone who responded who works for Fox that says long. That was the whole response. Long.
Oh, my gosh.
another response was, don't do it. Just watch Bermudez and Grant and the main. Another response, watch it on like 16 times fast forward. Another one was F. I mean, just, and so I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be an awful card. And then you see all the decisions. You know, I think when you know, 6 months from now, no one's really going to remember what happened in Germany, most likely. But really, the storyline going out of this is, A, you know, Anthony Smith, another new blood in that light heavyweight division. When you think of other, you know, new blood, you think of Tyson Pedro and Dom Reyes. And, I mean, look, you could certainly make the case that maybe Anthony Smith finds a way into even, whether it's a title fight or an interim title fight. And I don't think a lot of people would be up in arms about that. But I think the other part of this is, it was sad watching that knockout.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, man, I thought Shogun was going to win, but I feel stupid now because that was predictable. I mean, whoever Anthony Smith's agent is, man, I mean, I don't know how big of a role he plays into setting up the opponent that his client takes on.
He's repped by Jim Walter, who also reps Stipe Miocic.
Again, that's if that guy played a role in making sure that Smith fights Sugar Rashad and Shogun Hua in the year 2018, he deserves all whatever percentage he's getting. Because you talk about, if you just pull up the light heavyweight rankings, and you mentioned some of this, there are quite a few, there's new blood, there's real tough guys, and you ask yourself, what is the easiest way to climb up to the tippity top of the light heavyweight division? And I'm saying this, I don't want to discount Anthony Smith. This dude hits really hard. His elbows are lethal. He's going to knock out most guys. But again, I think this is one of the easiest roads one could take atop the top 15. Shogun Hua and Rashad Evans. I don't know who's next. I mean,
so here's the interesting thing. So I just pulled him up, and as we're doing this podcast here on Tuesday afternoon, the rankings have not been updated. So Anthony Smith is not in the top 15. And yeah, after what we saw on Sunday with, you know, Corey Anderson beating Glover Teixeira, where does Anthony Smith fall in at the top 10?
Oh, man, that's tough. Let me think about that. Oh, man, I feel like I might put Anthony Smith at number 7. I'm thinking. I think I would definitely have Jimmy Manuel ahead of him for sure. And I know Glover falls down, but
I think
above? Would you put Corey Anderson above Anthony Smith?
No.
Really? I mean, I know we were talking on back and forth, and he tweeted out like, I'm a top three heavyweight, and like maybe not, like maybe not.
Look, yeah. I understand why he said that. I get it. You just beat, you know, the quote unquote number three title challenger at 205, but let's be honest about it. At the end of the day, Corey Anderson is 2-2 in his last four fights, you know, and me and Danny were going back via text messages on this, but you know, you forget, you know, prior to these two wins, which previous one came against Pat Cummings, knockout loss against OSP, knockout loss against Jimmy Manoa. So you can't put Corey Anderson above OSP and Jimmy Manoa. You can't do it, you know, but, you know, I would think, and of course, the whole John Jones situation. But, you know, I was listening to the Co-Main Event podcast earlier today, and I thought they kind of hit on something right here. When you look at 205, does this not scream light heavyweight tournament to determine the next champion? Because I think we can all agree the odds of Daniel Cormier ever fighting at 205 again are very slim.
It would be such a Daniel Cormier move. Because this is a guy who I feel like really is unlucky that he's the 1-2-time champion that we strip him like immediately, right? Like everyone else, like Conor McGregor gets to hold on to the two titles like for the length of the Lord of the Rings movies, like forever. Guys get to hold on to him, and it would be a total DC story where this dude doesn't get to like hold the title for longer than a year, and we strip it. And we should. Because he's not going to defend it again because he's going to fight two people and their names are Brock Lesnar and maybe John Jones.
He's not going to fight a light heavyweight again. Is a fight with John Jones at 205 or 265?
It's a good question.
Look, we don't know when we're going to see John Jones again. That's the big the big question mark. You know, I did find it interesting that Dana White wished John Jones a happy birthday on Instagram. I don't know if you saw that one. I thought was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah,
with the not so great relationship those two guys have.
Yeah, that you're reading into this social media thing like my ex girlfriend read into me liking other girls' pictures.
Daniel, that was not a smart move, Daniel. Just telling you, not smart.
Sometimes I'm going to the restroom and like I just mindlessly open social media. I like your pictures of food, and I'm like, oh, that's a great quote this lady put. I'm going to like her picture in the bikini.
Don't you know people can see what you like on Instagram?
Yeah. Yeah. It's why I have an ex-girlfriend, not a current girlfriend. It's a rough subject, Jason, but but it is funny how there's like similarities between, you know, millennial dating culture and John Jones and Dana White, how they constantly communicate back and forth. I think when we're talking about light heavyweight, you mentioned light heavyweight tournament. I would love that. If we're being positive about this this card here, Jason, I think the positive thing would be there were because like it was rough for Hamburg. I mean, more rough than Hamburg's soccer team, who finished second to last in the table in the Bundesliga. What's up? Got that reference in. But there were two light heavyweights that I thought were really good. That I mean, no one's going to talk about because it gets lost in the shuffle. But if you manage to watch the entire card, I just want to point out that there are two other names we can add to the list of new blood. Their wins aren't as important as cool as we've seen from Dom Reyes and Pedro, etc. But Darko Stosic and Alexander Rakic, those two guys at 205 really impressed me on this fight card, Jason.
Man, what a dominating performance by Alexander too.
Yeah, that was the most. That was a very entertaining decision. A couple of the decisions weren't very entertaining. Like, I did not like Marcin Tybura stiffen Struve. It was just a matter of Tybura getting takedown. It's kind of boring. But this fight was so dominant that it was exciting. And it's one of the rare times where you see not one but two judges deliver 30-24 scorecards. So I thought was justified. So if I was going to point out one prospect in particular, I think Alexander Rakic is the guy I would go at and say – this is a big time new blood name at 205.
Here is the crazy thing you mentioned about Stefan Struve. Think back to September 29th, 2012. He TKOs Stipe Miocic. Since that fight, he has gone 3-6.
Wow.
I feel like you know, I mean, obviously Stefan's still a young guy, and you know, who knows what his career is ultimately going to be. But I feel like at this point, you just look at this guy of, you know, what could have been, you know, and look, everyone points it out about Stefan is just not using his reach to his advantage.
Yeah, that is, he is definitely very much a guy who, think back to when he originally entered the, I mean, there are not very many fighters that are in the UFC heavyweight division right now that kicked off their UFC career before 2009, or which is when he did, when he lost to Junior Dos Santos. And this guy, and we're talking 2009, we're talking 9 years ago, and Stroop is still 30 years old. I don't think he's going to be in the UFC in 3 years. I really don't. I just feel like there's a lot of wear and tear on that body. He's been a part of some of the most brutal knockout losses. And, man, thinking back, there was that one fight he had against Dennis Stojnik back in Germany where it was just a bloody mess. But I just think – obviously, Stefan Struve has had it beaten down into him when it comes to training of how to utilize his reach. And for whatever reason, he just doesn't do it effectively. And – it seemed like he was attempting to do a little bit of that here against Marcin Tybura, but we're talking about a fighter who has basically only one win over a guy who's still in the UFC. So I think his days are numbered.
Yeah, that's another crazy stat on Stefan Struve. But you look at when Stefan made his UFC debut. So this was UFC 95, February 21st, 2009. It aired on Spike, which the event drew 2.4 million viewers. Boy, the UFC wishes they could get that currently. Here's a question. Can they even get 2.4 million viewers on Saturday on Fox?
God, I really hope so.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because that's a great fight card. But we've seen some awful ratings, some just terrible ratings. So I don't know, man.
So you had a 5-fight main card. Out of those 10 fighters, how many do you think are still in the UFC?
I'm going to guess 2. How many are there?
2.
Who
Diego Sanchez and Damian Maya.
Oh my gosh. Diego feels like it's cheating.
So the other fighters on the card were Joe Stevenson, Dan Hardy. I don't think you can count Dan Hardy, at least right now. Rory Markham, Nate Marquardt, who's retired, Wilson Gouveia, Damian Maya, Shael Sonnen, Paul Thiago, Josh Koscheck.
That's insane. That's insane. And the crazy thing is, when you go look at that time period, and you look at maybe like the rankings back then, you talk about the light heavyweight champion. This is during Rashad Evans' reign. Brock Lesnar's and Frank Mir are the two champions. Randy Couture still in the mix. Anderson Silva is the middleweight champion. GSP and John Fitch, the top two guys in the welterweight division. And then the lightweight division is the weirdest one with BJ Penn, Sean Sherk, and Kenny Florian reigning on top with Frank Yedger in the background. But it shows you how things change. And to me, the saddest point is what you mentioned, the TV viewership for that fight card. And how it's just, ugh.
Now, by the way, you mentioned Frankie Edgar. Were you like me and just kind of like surprised with the matchup of Chan Sung Jung?
Yeah, there's been a lot of surprising matchups that they've announced.
When I saw that, I was like, well, that's an interesting fight booking. Then I said, well, I guess Max Holloway's coming back sooner than we think.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but it's like, man, you're really sending Chan Sung Jung to the Korean military with a tough fight there.
That's an awful matchup.
For him, yeah. I mean, do you know if this is his last fight before he goes?
He's already done his 2 years.
Huh?
He's already done his 2 years.
Oh, he just did his 2 years.
You're thinking of the 45er.
Duho Choi.
Yeah, that's who you're thinking. Yeah, he's got his 2 years coming up here soon, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, you know what? This could be a win for the Korean Zombie, because the thing with Frankie Edgar is that, you know, Brian Ortega completely starched him. So maybe that could happen again. I mean, probably not. But you know, the fight that I saw today?
Yoel Romero, Paulo Costa?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's going to be a tough fight for Paulo Costa. But would watch. I mean, talk about two rhinos just going at it.
I was surprised that Romero was staying at 185.
You thought he was going to cut down to 155?
No, I thought he was going up to 205.
You know what? Aside from the fact that that's just better for his body, I mean, I would pick Romero against every fighter at 205 other than DC and Gustafson.
Well, I mean, look, we've talked about this plenty of times about kind of the prime examples of why, you know, don't cut so much weight. Anthony Smith is a prime example of this. First off, you look at him in the inside the octagon on Sunday, you're like, how the hell did this guy make 185? It's another example of, you know, of not trying to cut a massive amount of weight can actually be good for your career because Anthony Smith is closer to a title shot than he's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, this dude's big. I mean, he's nearly 6'5". I think he's like 6'4" or something. And he does not scream middleweight fighting at 205. I mean, he was much bigger than his opponent. And I think a big part of his fight was like his ability to – his arms were so long that he was able to connect on the elbows at a nice range. Like, that was a big effective point. And that's a 185 moving up to 205. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys at 185 that probably should be fighting at 205. And it's just like, you know, you talk about cutting weight maybe for a competitive advantage, but it's like fighters are so single-minded when it comes to how they can gain competitive advantages, they don't realize that they are at a much better competitive advantage just fighting in a weaker division at light heavyweight. It is more likely to be champion at 205 than middleweight currently when you look at the top 10 of each division.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, I will say this about this fight card on Sunday. The other thing that really sticks out to me and the fighter that I'm really interested to see how he develops, and that's Manny Bermudez. You know, I think that when it comes to jiu-jitsu, this guy's amazing. Now, you know, the question with him is always going to be what happens if he can't, you know, put himself in position to get a submission? What if this fight just stays on the feet? But he's a guy that I'm extremely interested to see how he develops.
That's a good one, man. He looks great, and I love the name, the Bermudez Triangle. Great nickname. I mean, we lightly touched it, but I mean, Corey Anderson, you know, completely controlled Teixeira. I mean, there's just no answer to the wrestling, and at some moments, his stand-up was all right. The other two moments, other than Marcin Tybura's victory, I thought the welterweight bout between Danny Roberts and David Zawada was great, just real back and forth, and it honestly could have gone either way. The other highlight in terms of just a skill level performance was the lightweight Nazareth Hack Paras, who I've got to figure out how to say both his and Mark's names. You know, Mark Daikisi is a fighter who I thought was like a great stand-up fighter, and he probably still is, but Nazareth went out there and outstruck him, and that to me was real impressive.
Yeah, it was, it's interesting to kind of see how, especially for me, Manny Bermudez, how he does advance on. But yeah, definitely not a fight card that once it's on UFC Fight Pass, you're going to go back there and watch that fight card. But when we get to the buy-sell segment, we'll have a couple of questions related to UFC Fight Night 134. Of course, last week also saw the fourth edition of PFL. This was featuring the featherweights and heavyweights, and this was marked the second fights in both of these tournaments. Lance Palmer, Andre Harrison, Steven Seiler all get wins at 145 pounds on the main card. Francimar Barossa and Philippe Lins both get stoppages in the heavyweight division. And you look at this, and I don't know how many people had Steven Seiler as being the number one seed heading into the playoff, but he is going to be the number one seed based on those two first-round finishes. Lance Palmer finishes in second place with 9 points. And then we had a three fighters tie with 6 points, Andre Harrison, Timur Valiyev, and Alejandre Almeida. So we'll see how that goes down there. But, I tell you, one of the things that really jumps out to me when I watch the PFL and I was watching the event this morning, the production, you know, when you turn on and you see the opening of that broadcast, it makes you feel like you're watching something special.
Yeah, it's great production. And the opener is a big, crucial part of it. That really struck me watching PFL, too. That's when I really noticed, man, this is really well done. I don't know what's going on, but they've got, to me, really smart people behind the production element of PFL. And the product itself is just an enjoyable Thursday night watch. I really thoroughly enjoy it. And I tell you what, I thoroughly enjoyed an Andre Harrison fight. I thought his fight against Nazareno Maligari, Jason, really, not the fight of the year, not a great fight. But it was good. I enjoyed Andre because of how well-rounded his approach was. I really thought his skill set was on display. And I'm eating some crow because Nazareno Malagar is a guy who I kind of picked as my dark horse to win the whole thing. And he's still going to have an opportunity. I mean, the other thing I learned today was all you had to do was win one fight to clinch a playoff seed when you're doing like 8 guys out of 12. So he's still in the mix. But Andre Harrison completely outclassed him.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the thing about the PFL. It has me interested. It's just unfortunate no one's watching. And
that's depressing, but you're right.
It's and look, and I've always said this, I want to see the PFL succeed because it's what's best for fighters. But it right now, no one's watching. I mean, they're neither of their first four shows have been in the top 150 on a Thursday evening, which it's not a good sign. And I don't, I want to see the PFL succeed, but I just, if no one's watching, they're not going to get this TV deal they want. Maybe they're on DAZN, but
if they can get DAZN money, they should jump at it. I mean,
if DAZN makes an offer right now, just take it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing these $1 million payouts or whatever they're doing, I mean, that's a lot of fight cards, and I don't know how much they're making when it comes to the gate, but hopefully they're making something there because they're not making that much on ad revenue. I can tell you that
I can tell you based on things I've heard about the gate, it's, I mean, look, I mean, the first two shows they were giving away, they were doing $5 tickets.
Yeah, that's rough. That's how much it costs to watch the wrestling show. Actually, no, the local wrestling show I work at, you can only get $5 tickets if you're a kid. I mean, you got to pay $10.
And
the wrestlers are getting paid a lot less than the PFL fighters by like a magnitude of 10,000 probably. So I don't know how the structure is going to work, but I guess enjoy it while we have it. Like, I thought the fight card was real enjoyable, especially, Barroso just completely destroyed Jack May.
Here's my problem with the PFL of this, Daniel. I struggle to stay up till 11 o'clock.
That's tough for the East Coast, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, look, don't feel bad for me at all. Don't feel bad for me. I just I get up early in the morning, and it's just, I remember I didn't watch, I mentioned the PFL 4 event I watched via DVR, but I think PFL 3, I remember it was like 10:15, and I'm falling asleep on the couch. And I'm just like, all right, record, I'm going to bed. It's tough for me to stay up. I mean, for you, I mean, being on the Central, man, if I was on the West Coast, oh, man, that'd be great.
Yeah, but the thing is, you are an anomaly. Like, very few people wake up as early as you.
Yeah, I'm definitely a there's not too many people that, I slept in this morning, Daniel. I woke up at 6:30.
I was going to set my alarm at 7 to wake up early, but I was like, screw that.
Daniel, when I was your age, if you had told me, hey, you're going to be waking up at 5:30 in the morning, I would have said, you are crazy. There is no way. But it's like, look, I'm usually in bed by, like, if you text me after 10 o'clock at night, there is a really good chance you're not getting a response back.
Yeah, I believe it. That's happened before. Because I do most of my thinking, I do most of my work at night. when the clock strikes 10, that's when my brain's turning, Jason. It takes me about 12 hours to wake up.
The best part is if I get a text like from you or somebody else after like I go to bed, I'm like, so do I answer them back at 5:30? Because I'm sitting there going, okay, it's 4:30 with Daniel. Yeah. So he's probably bad.
Yeah. The good thing is my phone is completely stupid. Like, my phone does not make any notification, and it's a new phone. I it's so bad. If I get a phone call, it just doesn't ring, and I look and I have a missed call, which is really bad for important calls. So you don't have to worry about that. Plus, I'm a heavy sleeper.
Look, I'm a heavy sleeper, but my wife hears everything, and she sometimes will hate people if she keeps. So I have to put my phone on silent. Otherwise, it's email notifications. Yeah, she doesn't exactly love my phone at certain times of the day.
Oh, you got to go with the hard do not disturb on nighttime because, I mean, to me, sleep, it's so easy, by the way, to just be in bed for like an hour looking at your phone and not go to sleep.
Oh,
so you got to put the phone far away, too.
Oh, yeah. Look, if my phone is not near me, I feel like I'm naked.
Yeah. Well, that's because I'm usually naked, but I agree with you.
Yeah, but I will say this, you know, while, you know, I didn't watch the UFC card on Sunday live, didn't watch the PFL live, I will be watching UFC on Fox on Saturday Night Live. I'm all in on this fight card. I mean, especially when you look at those four fights on the main card, this is a great four fight, you know, Fox card.
I feel like these 2 weeks are like MMA in a nutshell, right? It's so bipolar. One week we're riding the death of MMA. Like every MMA website has like that hardcore columnist with, you know, it's like, oh, MMA's dead or UFC's dying and stuff. And it's the worst thing ever. And then you look at the website this week. Oh my gosh, this fight card is amazing. That's to me the sport in a nutshell. It goes in cycles, and maybe we're in a negative cycle. But at the end of the day, let's be positive for a moment and say that this fight card, this main card on UFC on Fox, I cannot wait to see Eddie Alvarez take on Dustin Poirier, Jose Aldo and Jeremy Stephens. And I'm always a fan of watching Ioane on Jacek fight. The opener's great. I just cannot wait. And there's plenty of other stuff littered throughout the prelims that I'm excited for.
Look, there's certain things I don't care for when it comes to MMA media. But can we stop just all – why do we have to put – when you hear the name Austin Vanderford, why does every time people have to say, oh, you know, that's Paige VanZant's fiance? Like, he can't just be Austin Vanderford?
You sound like every – you know, whenever there's like a female athlete-to-athlete relationship, and it's always like
– but it's Jose never vice versa, Daniel.
What?
But you never hear like the female fighter's name. Oh, you know, she's a fiance of this fighter's name.
Oh, but in every other sport, it's like that. Like Jose Altidore was like dating a soccer player. And I guess I'm proving the point that I can't remember her name. But everyone's like, Jose Altidore's girlfriend does this. And like the internet just pitchforks.
Look, I know why websites are doing it. It's because of SEO. That's all that is.
Well, yeah. Paige VanZant's like a way bigger. I mean, Brian Caraway, for the longest time, was Misha Tate's boyfriend, and obviously no longer. But that was a part of his gimmick, that he was in a relationship with Misha Tate, and he was a great bantamweight.
I'm telling you what, I'm shocked that Austin didn't get signed.
Yeah,
but I figured because of who he's getting married to, that Dana would have signed him. I was surprised last week when that didn't happen.
Me too.
Now on those contender series contracts, there is a 30-day clause they have to basically, you know, hey, if we want to sign you next 30 days, we got you. But I was surprised by that. You know, I like watching contender series. It's a nice little Tuesday evening for me, as long as I can stay up till 10 o'clock at night, which sometimes can be a problem, but no, I enjoy it. But I mean, look, you know, you mentioned about these fights that are going to be on Saturday. You know, I mean, look, under the radar probably is Alexander Hernandez and Olivia Aubin-Mercier. I mean, look, the main event's great. Co-main event, if I would have said to you 3 years ago that Jeremy Stephens is going to be favored over Jose Aldo, you would have said I am crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it speaks to where Aldo is. And you talk about depressing. If he goes out there and gets knocked out by Jeremy Stephens, I'm going to be so sad. It could certainly happen. I think Aldo's going to win that fight, though. I really do. And I think we're going to see just a return to form for some of these fighters who have been really great. I think these are going to be great performances out of Aldo. I think we're going to see a great performance out of Ioane on Jacek as well.
Remember, it's been 2 years since Jose Aldo won a fight.
You bring up a valid point. And the issue I do have with Jose Aldo is it seems like once he let the foot off the gas pedal when it came to the intensity of everything, and he kind of let himself get distracted, and it's just like Conor McGregor's been in his head for two straight years, kind of.
Well, I just looked at the betting odds. Jose is the betting favorite right now. But I think
we got to start drinking every time you call someone an underdog and then you check the betting odds.
Come on, you agreed with me though. You agreed.
I mean, it's +115 and -130. I thought I wasn't being lied to. You know, Johnson was a favorite, I think maybe I would double check.
Look, I would bet you on Saturday, if you go on every MMA website and they have, you know, who the writers are picking, I bet you more people pick Jeremy Stephens than Jose Aldo.
Yeah, you could be right. I mean, the line opened, Jeremy Stephens is minus 105, and now he's plus 100. So maybe people zag when others zig, but...
Yeah, I mean, look, you look at this, and one of the things that we were going to mention is, you know, outside, you know, which betting underdog has the best chance to win, and I'm sure for a lot of people, the pick would be Eddie Alvarez at plus 135, which I'm a little surprised by that line, to be honest with you. I was thinking this probably more of a pick'em, but in terms of other underdogs on this fight card that I look at as... you know, the best chance to win, you know, in terms of what sticks out to me, you know, I'd probably look at Alexander Hernandez, and I'm on high on him. I mean, Cajun Johnson is a huge underdog. He's a 5-1 underdog. Islam Makhachev is a 7-1 favorite. Look, if Cajun loses on Saturday night, I think there's probably a very good likelihood this is Cajun's last fight in the UFC.
Yeah, that would suck because, like,
we both know why that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's so on the nose and obvious, and it's like a bad matchup for him. I mean, I would like for us to be wrong, but I mean, by the way, just to mention it, my underdog pick is Dustin Ortiz at plus 215. I mean, pulled it off against Pantoja, mm-hmm. and he's matched up again with another tough Brazilian. And Matheus Nicolau, who's very good. But I think Dustin Ortiz is just a guy who's fought at a really high level at 125 for a very long time, incredibly well-rounded, and I think he won the decision. So that's where I would put my money on if you're looking for an underdog there.
I would, and sticking with those prelims on Fox, I like that Jordan Mean, Alex Morono fight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, when I think of those two, I just think high volume, incredibly aggressive. And I think that's going to be a great fight. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Mike Dessy and Ross Pearson as well. I think that'll be a great stand-up contest. And, you know, it's a must-win fight for Randa Markos when you look down that prelim. Mm-hmm. A fighter who I think flirted with a semi-level of stardom for a while, coming off of the Ultimate Fighter. Not big time, but it seemed like she was going to be a fixture at women's strawweight for time to come. And, I mean, she finds herself opposite Nina Ansaroff, who I think is another fighter for the UFC you want to groom, given, you know, her relationship with Amanda Nunes. Mm-hmm. And I hope I didn't screw that up, by the way. She's dating Amanda Nunes,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, God. Yeah, there's so many relationships that...
I still say, I think the UFC screwed up. They should have done, on the card of Nunes and Raquel Pennington, it should have been Nina Ansaroff, Tisha Torres.
Yeah, maybe they can do Nina Ansaroff for Kel Pennington. Well, I guess they can't do that fight. I guess they can't do that fight unless they meet at flyweight. I was going to say, maybe Tisha can fight Amanda Nunes, but yeah, that would be a really bad fight.
Yeah, I mean, for Tisha, she's always kind of – I've always felt like she's always been that one step away. And Saturday night's another example of this where she's one step away. You know, kind of the interesting backstory to this fight is, you know, Tisha used to train in American Top Team. Of course, Ioana, this is now her third fight that she's been, or third or fourth fight she's been ATT. So there is that backstory there. For Tisha, when you think about the struggles that Claudia Gadelha had, is particularly the second fight against Ioana, I kind of see this it folding out the same way. I just think the longer the fight goes on, it's just going to more and more benefit Ioana Jędrzejczyk. But, you know, that's a big matchup at women's 115 pounds. You know, Alvarez and Poirier, I was thinking about this earlier today. And, you know, on Thursday of this week, Connor will be in a New York courtroom. You know, a lot of speculation that a plea agreement is going to be announced at that point. But I was thinking about Poirier and Alvarez. Is it greater than a 50-50 chance that the winner of this fight is Khabib's first title defense?
Ooh, that's a great question, and I would say less. I would say slightly less. I mean, I think first off, Eddie Alvarez, you win this fight, you got to renegotiate a UFC deal, and you got to ask for a lot of money. So and it's going to be a tough fight against Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier could very well win. But the reason why I would put it at less than 50, Jason, is that when you look at the UFC lightweight division, I feel as though you can't really put higher than 40% on anybody. You can't put it on Tony Ferguson. You can't put it on Connor. There's so many different options that it's hard to go out there and feel confident about who's going to get that next title shot. I think we're kind of living in the moment if we think it's higher than 50%.
I mean, I do kind of feel I do feel that the moment Connor reaches a plea deal, like within 48 hours, we have a Connor Khabib fight announcement.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to bet money, that's the fight that I think is going to happen next for Khabib. You know,
it has to happen. I mean, this, you know, I was thinking about this earlier this week, and the UFC, in terms of what gets me excited about what the UFC can do over the next couple months, outside of Khabib Connor, there's just not much. I and not trying to sound like a Bellator homer here, but Bellator is doing much more things that I'm very interested in. And what I mean by that is that no matter what's going on, I am going to do my best to watch that, those events live. When you look at, obviously, the heavyweight tournament and now the welterweight tournament, you know, there's just, to me, there's just not a lot of things the UFC has to offer that sits there and says, I'm going to be in front of my television on Saturday night. Now, this Saturday night, they're offering me a reason. I mean, Alvarez Poirier, Aldo Stevens, I mean, all four of the fights on the main card on Fox. But there's just, to me, there's just very little that gets me jacked up on the UFC right now.
Yeah, this is one of those weeks where that's not the case, but totally, especially looking back at what we just got. I mean, that was a fight card that had very little in terms of excitement when it comes to talent level, fight quality, and storyline. Here is the zagging. It helps there's a lot more UFC events and Bellator events. I mean, that's going to lead to that. But that's kind of why I feel positive about, you know, UFC on Fox, Alvarez versus Poirier too. I don't know how it's going to translate to ratings. What's funny, though, is, like, you talk about Calgary. I mean, the UFC's only been in Calgary one other time. And we were, and it was the third long. You know, it was one of the one of the events that was the longest fight cards ever. I think it's number three.
Was that 161?
149.
149. Yeah, that's right.
It was that we had that trio of fights between Tim Bosch and Lombard, Congo and Sean Jordan, and James Head and Brian Ebersole. And I just I remember those fights being just the absolute worst. We had two no contests on that card. Matthew Riddle, although I think the no contest for the Riddle fight was probably a
That was drugged, yeah.
But yeah, Matt Riddle was still in the UFC, and, you know, Matt Riddle is now moving on to the WWE, I think.
Is he in WWE now?
Well, he canceled all of his independent wrestling dates, and that means he signed to the WWE. Because when you do that and you don't announce where you're going, that means the WWE signed you. Because the WWE doesn't like you telling anyone that they signed you until they announce it. So he's going to WWE, trust me. But it's like after that event, Dana White said that they're going to come back to Calgary and reward them, and they have not been back since now.
I mean, hell, UFC 227 is next week.
Yeah. And that was UFC 149 in 2012. And they sold the place out, I believe. 16,000 people in attendance.
Yeah.
They're renting the exact same venue. I feel like they won't do 16,000. But, at least they got a good fight eventually.
I mean, look, the main event is by far the best fight of this fight card. But what's the number two one? That one, I would
still go with Aldo and Stevens, man. I think that's more guaranteed to be exciting than Joanna and Torres.
Yeah. I like your thought process on that.
Anything else stick out to you that we didn't mention?
Akeem Dawodu is a guy I've always found interesting. You know, interesting to kind of see how he fights. He's fighting Austin Arnett on the Fox Sports on the Fox prelims. Of course, he lost his UFC debut back earlier this year. You know, guy that, you know, rising up that Canadian mixed martial arts scene was, you know, a guy that interests me. You know, MacDessie and Ross Pearson. That's a fight where, I mean, Ross Pearson, man. Oof. You have to imagine that, I mean, he is coming off that win at UFC 221, but, you know, kind of where is he at this point in his career? Another flyweight matchup buried on the Fight Pass prelims.
Are you saying, yeah, I mean, and another women's flyweight matchup and a women's strawweight matchup. I mean, you would think you would put the Marcos Ansaroff fight on TV, but I mean, maybe I'm wrong there. Maybe I'm wrong. just because I feel like Ansaroff is a fighter that's marketable. Yeah, and so is Marcos.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
But you know what? Thank the Lord, we only have 8 TV fights. We only have 8 fights on TV. It's amazing.
Yeah. I guess the question is, does Alvarez Poirier start before 10 p.m. Eastern time?
No. No way. I mean, it's the main card starts at
8.
8 Eastern? Okay, because I'm pretty sure Joanna Torres will go 15 minutes. I think it all comes down to this time it takes.
I bet Aldo Stevens goes all 15 minutes.
If it does, then yeah. I mean, to me, that one could also end the first round. But, I mean, they have it blocked out. They have a lot of ads they want to run. And I feel like they're going to run more stuff during the main card broadcast and the prelim broadcast. So maybe the bell rings before 10 o'clock Eastern.
Before we get to buy sell, who you got, Alvarez or Poirier?
I have Eddie Alvarez. Who you got?
Alvarez, yeah.
So congratulations, Dustin Poirier.
you just won a title shot, Dustin.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get into buy sell. We got four topics here this week. Daniel, up first, we got Anthony Smith fights for a UFC title at some point in his career.
I'm going to buy this, Jason. I don't feel great about it, but I just look at this light heavyweight division. You know, we've talked about the young blood, the new blood. Those guys are tough, but the Ilo Latifi, the Glover Teixeira, the Volkan Ozdemir, the Jan Błachowicz of the world, those guys don't inspire enough fear in me to make me think that one day Anthony Smith won't be able to piece together that streak and get that title shot. And hell, the guy's probably one win away from a title shot anyway, so I'm buying this.
Yeah, the reason I'm buying it is just more of the lack of depth at 205. I mean, you just mentioned it there. I mean, There's just not much there, and I feel like we're probably it wouldn't shock me if we see Gustafsson Smith as an interim title fight. It just wouldn't.
It would shock me if Gustafsson agrees to that fight, because I think the one thing he hates is not fighting Daniel Cormier. I feel like he doesn't agree to any fight that isn't DC and Volkan Ozdemir. I'm probably wrong, but I just feel like he got I don't know, man. It was really weird that he got injured as soon as Anthony Smith won. You know,
he did explain that on Monday. I heard, you know, I mean, look, it's, you know, I mean, look, you give Glover Teixeira credit for taking the fight against Corey Anderson when there really wasn't anything to gain for him there. And you know, maybe that's, you know, I mean, look, you got to be smart at your career. But I'll say this. I was looking, I don't know if you saw the tweet from the UFC, tickets for UFC 228 go on sale this week. I really hope the main event, co-main event, is not the picture they put out.
Are you telling me that Nico Montano and Valentina Shevchenko isn't money?
Look, Zabit and Yair is a fight I want to see. But if I'm living in Dallas, am I paying a pay-per-view price for that fight card right now? Nope.
Maybe the UFC like signed a deal with Yair and they're like, we're going to give you 50% of our pay-per-view profit. And they stuck him on this one. Maybe they're just getting back at him.
I feel bad for the MMA fans in Dallas.
Yeah.
Like I feel like they're trying to put Woodley on that fight card. You know, someone had mentioned, oh, they'll put, you know, maybe Gustafsson versus Smith. And I'm like,
that's not any better.
In terms of a pay-per-view buy, I don't think it's going to, you know, but it's just, you know, it's just, and hey, that's a fight card during the college football season. So yeah,
that's going to do 40,000 buys.
Good luck. I tweeted on Monday, that's a tough sell. If that's your main event, co-main event on pay-per-view, that's a tough sell.
Yep. 100% agree with you.
Number two, Shogun Hua main events, a UFC card in 2019. I'm buying this just because the UFC needs main events. They want to go into foreign markets, and they're always going to want to put a young guy up against Shogun to help propel that young guy.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's going to retire. I'm going to buy this too. I mean, he's probably going to get one more fight in 2018, and maybe a loss would derail this buy. But you mentioned it. There's an absurd amount of cards. Shogun is a name. There aren't very many names. Montano Shevchenko's headline in a pay-per-view, maybe, maybe not. So I'm buying this too. I think Shogun wins his next fight, even though he looked really old. This is a guy who does a nice job of turning things around. Maybe we've seen him turn around for the last time, but I don't think so. I'm buying this.
Up next, and we talked a little about this earlier, It's a good idea to spend $1 million on your kid's birthday party. I don't know how you buy this. This is a hard sell for me.
Yeah, hard sell. I don't think I've made more than $10,000 in my life. So $1 million, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to make that in my entire life either. I don't think in my entire life I will make $1 million, Jason. I mean, maybe.
You will.
You think so? I guess if I have like a $40,000 a year salary job, I guess if I live long enough, I probably could. But anyways, no, I'm selling this. No, if you have Dana White money, I'm still selling this. That's just a bad look, right? Like if your kid turns up bad in terms of, you know, he's the next Lindsay Lohan, and then you have internet history of you giving him an $1 million birthday party, I mean, you know who's to blame there. So I'm selling this.
Yeah, it's a definite sell for me.
Just go to Peter Piper Pizza.
The last one. Misha Tate is completely retired.
Selling this. I think she comes back.
Look, you could put any fighter's name in here, I'd sell it.
It's a good point. Here's my prediction. Misha Tate fights. She's 31, by the way. And they're like, I brought this topic up because there was an article about how she's like going to do competitive grappling or whatever. Dude, she's 31. Misha Tate is going to headline a UFC show for the featherweight title, and she's going to take on Kayla Harrison. That's my prediction.
I think the better question would be, Misha Tate comes out of retirement to fight in MMA in the next 12 months.
Oh, I'm selling that. I feel like that's a little too quick of a turnaround. I mean, I've never had a child. I understand Serena Williams like went to the finals of whatever the tournament that just happened, and she had a kid and stuff, but she's Serena Williams. And we've seen female fighters have children and fight and stuff. But it seemed like to retire and also have a kid, that takes a little bit longer than like 12 months to return. Like it seems like she's just starting the returning process to sporting stuff. Like she's just talking about doing grappling. So I think it's going to take longer than a year.
Yeah. Within the next 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. But again, she's 31 years old. That is incredibly young for fighting.
Yeah. It's, look, it's always tough to take a fighter's retirement seriously.
And she's a name. I mean, she's one of the biggest names in women's MMA history. I mean, she's probably number six if we're doing it. Just off the top of my head, like I would say Rousey, Carano, Cyborg, Holly Holm, maybe. I don't know.
I'd put Misha in front of Holly.
So yeah, okay, I can see that. I would put Joanna
number four. I would say number four. Yeah.
Well, you got Joanna too.
But I feel like, and maybe this is wrong of me, but I kind of feel like Misha kind of, in a way, kind of crossed into that mainstream.
Oh,
where Joanna, I don't feel she's done that yet.
And I didn't even mention freaking Amanda Nunes.
No.
I feel, for sure I'd put Amanda over Misha. I mean, look, I think more people want to see Misha Tate fight than Amanda Nunes. But I still think Amanda may be a bigger name, which is crazy.
Here's a bigger question. If you walked into a bar on Saturday night and you asked 20 people, name the female fighters you know, where does Misha Tate rank in that?
I think top five.
Oh, easy top five.
Yeah.
Is she named within the first three?
Yeah. I mean, to me,
Rana's got to be the consistent number one.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's... Does it go Ronda Misha, or does it go Ronda Cyborg?
Yeah. I mean, Cyborg's just been a part of so much of sports culture. Like, think of how many different segments on ESPN or Fox Sports 1 sports talk shows have Cyborg in it.
But here's the other thing. How many of them if you're a longer-term MMA fan, Gina would clearly be in there.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're a newer MMA fan, she's not even
– That's true.
It's not going to be mentioned.
Yeah. I think people forget. Gina might be like the most forgotten because, like, God, she was Ronda before Ronda.
I saw that the interview that Misha did for MMA Junkie, and I thought she hit on a really great point, and I don't know how much people are talking about it, but, you know, she was talking about Ronda going to Hall of Fame and kind of feeling like they both should have gone in at the same time. And, I mean, look, you can't write the history of women's MMA without, you know, mentioning what Ronda and Misha did. I mean, without...
Wait, did Misha said she thought she should have been in the Hall of Fame at the same time as Ronda?
Yeah.
That's dumb. Come on, Ron Misha. I thought you were saying that about maybe Gina Carano.
No, but I mean, if Ronda Misha, you know, that just rivalry to me is got to be. I mean, obviously, look, the UFC got in the women's MMA game because of Ronda Rousey, but Misha Tate, I think, you know, plays a massive role into that as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, she you need rivals to build storylines. Mm-hmm, yeah. You got your stars. I mean, that's the sad part about Cyborg is she will forever play the role of rival, I think.
Yeah.
She's always been the rival. She's always been Carano's rival, and even though they never fought Rousey's rival. And, I mean, now she finds herself almost rivalless, and it's like now she's Nunez's rival. Like, Cyborg, to me, despite being maybe the best female fighter ever, has always been the B side of the equation of people want to see her lose to somebody else, I think. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I just feel like she's like the ultimate rival.
Yeah, but I think the thing about the women's side of the sport is, can there be another fighter that can reach the star power of a Rousey?
Yeah, but it's probably, I don't see it in the horizon. I mean, I don't think we ever imagined someone like Conor McGregor before that happened. So when the Conor McGregor thing happened, and that's something where it happened out of thin air. This wasn't the first ever female fighter. This wasn't the first ever, you know, lightweight guy. This was just random. The dude had just had star power. I don't think you can predict the heights people can reach when it comes to popularity. You just never know.
No, you're spot on. You know, I would tell you, because it just kind of came to mind because, you know, there's very few fighters that draw the audience out of Ronda or Conor has. And, you know, I've talked about this podcast, how I do marketing for a restaurant group, and one of our properties shows UFC events. And I was having a conversation with our director of operations, and we were talking about, you know, MMA and kind of, you know, the crowd draws in and things along those lines. And he was telling me this story about how, because we were talking about Bellator and what Bellator could maybe do to get more brand awareness. And he said to me, he's like, look, they need to get on FS1 with UFC leaving FS1. I go, well, okay. I was like, I get you. I said, and he expanded that point. He said, he goes, think about it. It's a 2 o'clock, you know, Tuesday afternoon. If someone's in a sports bar, he goes, there's fights on FS1 or FS2. And he goes, that helps kind of with the branding. And I was like, you know, I was like, that's a really interesting thought. Because we're going to get into Bellator with the zone here, but I don't feel that Bellator will be on Paramount in next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, to me, they're transitioning to being on DAZN, but the question is, how does DAZN get on sports bar TVs?
That's a big question mark. I mean, that's the ESPN Plus question too, which is something I'm looking into right now, because I think we're going to see more. I think ESPN is going to be putting more content on ESPN Plus. I haven't signed up for ESPN Plus. I need to, because I really just kind of want to, you know, see what's kind of on there. I mean, it's a very cheap, and there was this article on sportstechie.com, which was about the DAZN monthly fee being double of what ESPN Plus is. And when I read this article, kind of my initial thought was they were really just comparing combat sports with combat sports, which really isn't fair because you get much more of that on ESPN Plus. And the article, the author of this article wrote this. He says, quote, when asked about the price, DAZN CEO James Rushton said the company decided to double the ESPN $4.99 monthly price because it needs a revenue firepower to put on pay-per-view events. The ultimate goal is to scoop up large rights across major sport professional sports when current rights deals expire in a few years. He believes that $9.99 is a compromise between getting the kind of revenue the company needs to succeed here and offering fans fair priced, high quality content. You know, look, I'm interested to see what DAZN becomes in the United States, but, you know, look, they're not going to have Major League Baseball. They're not going to have NFL. They're not going to have NBA, which, you know, those are some of the things that ESPN Plus is going to have.
Yeah, that to me is, if you're going to compete with ESPN Plus, it's like, that's what you need, man. I mean, it's not a combat sport versus combat sport network. It's an all sport versus all sport, and ESPN's got them beat big time. Now, DAZN, they may win the combat sports battle. You know, the UFC may not put their best cards on ESPN Plus, and it looks like Bellator's putting all their eggs into the DAZN cards. You know, that initial entry looks great. They have some big time names in boxing. And I will pay $9.99 a month.
But it's kind of weird. You get the first. This is a question mark to me. Is you get the first month free, so you're going to get the Anthony Joshua fight, and you're going to get the Bellator Carlos September 29th. The question is, are you renewing it when that 30 days expires?
I'm not going to renew it. I'm going to forget to cancel it.
Nah, that's a good point.
I mean, dude, I'm still getting payments for things I thought I deleted. Like, the best thing that ever happened to me was I lost my credit card, because that meant I had to cancel it, which means all my subscriptions start again. They just cancel, and I can just redo whatever I want, you know. I'm no longer getting that Tinder Plus yearly subscription. So, I wonder if I still am subscribed to The Athletic. I don't know. I think I paid like a one-year thing, and I read that website for – I might read it again today now that I think about it. But anyways, moral of the story is this, Jason. This is completely random, but you know what I think ESPN Plus should have on their network? I was just thinking about this. I think they should have – they should upload every SportsCenter they've ever done, and you get to just pick a date and watch the SportsCenter from that date.
Interesting.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, that's a lot of content to put on that people probably won't use. But there's no, like, I listen to these guys like Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann talk about how the good old days and stuff. And to me, what they did, you can't get in like a 5-minute YouTube clip. Like, you get in watching the entire SportsCenter, because that was like appointment viewing. And it was, I don't know. The moral of the story is, I just want to see Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann complete SportsCenters.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. There's like 10 people that want that. But anyways, I would say 10-9 round for DAZN when it comes to the first month of content. I don't know if the UFC will beat them when it comes to an Anthony Joshua fight. Although, they did have Manny Pacquiao on ESPN Plus, so maybe I'm wrong. I think more people interested in Manny Pacquiao than Anthony Joshua?
Ooh.
I have no idea.
I mean, Joshua doesn't have the name value yet.
Yeah, I mean, boxing fans listening to this are going to be like, of course it's Joshua, you stupid idiot. I mean, he's the best heavyweight in the world.
Well, I mean, look, just use the analogy I always use. If you walk to a sports bar on Saturday night, how many people would – if you put a photo lineup, how many people would know who Anthony Joshua is?
I think a little more than you'd think. Obviously, way more know who Pacquiao is.
I mean, look, but if we were in England, it's a totally different story.
Oh, yeah, totally different story. It just makes me sad that he's not fighting Wilder yet. Like, I just need to see that fight.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope this isn't, you know, it's going to take 5 years for this fight to happen. Like,
yeah.
Mayweather Pacquiao.
Yeah. We need to do like a foreign exchange program with a boxing podcast, like where it's like boxing podcasters that are casual MMA fans. And we can give them the casual boxing fan perspective, and they can give us, you know.
I just think the question with DAZN is, you know, for the MMA part of it is, you know, what kind of, you know, cards are you going to get on there? I mean, obviously, you're gonna get all the welterweight tournament fights. But, you know, what else is Bellator going to offer? I still think that the way the Bellator should market this is they should market it towards cord cutters.
How would they do that?
Just basically say, hey, if you cut the cord but you still want to get the Bellator product, you get DAZN, because every Bellator event will be on DAZN.
Yeah. Yeah, that to me is a good pitch. And it's why I'm considering keeping that throughout, you know. I'm going to monitor the quality of the cards, because to me, I have a deep suspicion that the quality will go down after the first few months. But there's some big-time commitments on some of those tournament fights, the heavyweight tournament fights, that I want to see that. And, you know, cord cutting, it's not happening at the rate – at which I think we think it's happening. It's certainly happening. It's not outrageously fast, but people are doing it, so might as well take advantage of the trend.
I'm my deal with DirecTV is up in October, and I'm considering it. And the reason for me is just more of like, I just don't watch my DirecTV much.
Yeah, the age of flipping through channels and watching 5 minutes of House Hunters and in 10 minutes of Crocodile Hunter are gone. You know, I hardly watch TV either. I just have it on ESPN random and just, you know, glance up to the screen to see random news, and that's about it.
Come on. To me, it's either I watch Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Yeah. To me, it's YouTube, it's Netflix, Amazon Prime, HBO Go, different apps on my phone. There just isn't much on TV that's appointment viewing other than Game of Thrones, which is on HBO Go. But
I've never watched one episode.
It's a good call. I mean, it's a little too late. I mean, there's only going to be like one season left. And if you start watching it, that's probably like...
But I feel like it's going to be on Amazon Prime at some point, and then I can just, you know, sit there and binge watch it.
You can. It's going to be a long binge watch, though. A really long binge watch. Like, we're talking, you know, 10 hours per season.
Of course, my favorite Netflix show just started back up. Already watched season, Last Chance U.
Yep.
If you're a football fan, that is must-watch TV.
Yeah, I just started watching it, and I absolutely love it too, man. I listened to your recommendation, and it is good stuff.
Yeah, that's my always thing is I finish like a show like that, and then I'm like, okay, what do I watch next on Netflix?
Yeah.
And then I feel like I go through the suggestion things over and over again. I just never find anything.
It's because it's like, this is good, but maybe there's something better.
Yeah, where is like the basketball version of Last Chance U?
Exactly. Yeah, and I feel like it's way easier to shoot too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's great editing. But, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, next week on Monday evening, I'll be over in Orlando to tape next week's episode of the MMA Report podcast, as it's going to be executive director roundtable confirmed. Mike Mazzulli, the head of the ABC, also Andy Foster, the head of the California State Athletic Commission. The interesting part about that, Daniel, is that'll be just a couple days before the UFC 227 weigh-ins. And one of the things that I'm interested to talk to Andy about is the fact of his decision that he is now going to be releasing fight night weights.
That is going to be that's going to be a must listen to. I mean, I'm going to be listening to it, Jason. It's going to be interesting to see what those weights are. will we get betting odds on the weights?
You know, someone will put betting odds on that stuff.
Yeah.
I've always, like, you know, you see it in boxing, you know, hey, you know, this is what he weighed in earlier today. You know, in MMA, it would be very interesting to just kind of see the, you know, he did it for the Bellator event that was in, I'm trying to think, was it Temecula was the last Bellator event in California? Yeah, it was Temecula. It was, you know, there was like one or two fighters that were above the 10%. You know, and so, but it's just interesting. I mean,
you know, what's crazy is there isn't a single fight on that card that is over lightweight. Every fight on that fight card is featherweight, bantamweight, flyweight, strawweight.
That's crazy. Yeah. I just pulled up the Wikipedia page. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. What if Demetrius Johnson weighs more than Dillashaw and Garbrandt? I mean, that's not going to happen, but if he does, I mean, he's definitely got to do that super fight.
God, I mean, I love the Dillashaw-Garbrandt matchup. You know, I was listening to Ali Abdelaziz on Ariel's show on Monday, and, you know, he was kind of, you know, not making excuses, but mentioned about some of the health issues Garbrandt had heading into that first fight. When it comes to the rest of that fight card, I mean, whew.
Yeah. Paulina Viana, J.J. Aldrich is not doing it for me. Neither
Why?
Is...
Look, and, you know, no disrespect to the fighters. Why is that on the pay-per-view?
Yeah, I mean, I know Pedro Munhoz, Brad Johns is the main event for the prelims, but I mean,
I'm surprised that Torres Perez fights on Fight Pass. That's a fairly big 125 pound fight.
Yeah,
but it is a flyweight fight, so you know the UFC doesn't want to. You know,
to me, there's three fights in this fight. Yeah, to me, there's three fights in this fight card. Yeah, we still not a single 125. Oh no, the championship fight is on the main card. There you go.
God, I've got to find there's a stat out there in 2018 about, you know, the lack of flyweight fights on main cards. And I think it's maybe there's only one other fight besides a DJ fight.
Yeah, it's probably, is it a Joseph Benavidez fight? I know we literally just saw Benavidez not fight on a main card. I mean, it's probably Cejudo Pettis.
Yeah, I feel like that was a prelim fight.
Yeah, I think that was also, let me double check. No, that was a main card fight. UFC 218.
That may be the only flyweight. There's like maybe one.
Oh, but that was in 2017. So
yeah, oof. It's just, oh man. But I mean, look, I'm all in on Dillashaw Garrett, right? But as I said, if you have any questions, comments, topics that you want me to bring up with the executive directors, you know, go ahead, let me know. You know, obviously drug testing, weight cutting, unified rules of MMA. You know, I will tell you, one of the things on Monday, looking at the agenda, one of the things that, a couple of things that jumped out to me, is, weigh-in times before fights. That's going to be talked about on Monday. Also, CPDs and therapeutic, cannabinoids is going to be talked about as well. USADA is going to speak that day. So that's going to be very interesting to kind of see kind of how all that plays out. You know, it's, this is the first time I'm going to an ABC meeting. I'll tell you, ABC under the previous regime held their meeting here in Clearwater, Florida, which is just outside of Tampa. I didn't go because I was kind of like, well, what's the point of going? Nothing really happens at these meetings. But now, since obviously, you look at what's going on with the ABC over the last 2 to 3 years, it's an organization that clearly wants the sport to evolve. Even, and we'll wrap up on this. Like, I feel like there are some people in this industry that I feel like they just want it to be status quo.
Yeah, I get that sense too. I just don't think those guys are going to win out. I really do think we're going to move forward.
It's crazy to me that Nevada still has not gone to the new unified rules of MMA.
To me, it has to happen at some point, clearly.
To me, that here's how it will happen in Nevada. The UFC says, we're not going to do it any more events in your state until you adopt the new unified rules. I bet you they would adopt those new unified rules real quick.
In a heartbeat. I just don't think they'll do that ultimatum. But in a heartbeat, they'll do it.
No, yeah. I mean, I mean, Idaho had new unified rules and Nevada doesn't. That's crazy to me.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it's just nuts. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the AmeriPort podcast. Of course, I'll be back next week with that podcast from Orlando with a couple of executive directors. And then Daniel will join me back here in 2 weeks' time as we'll talk about everything that's going on in the world of MMA. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. Also available on RadioInfluence.com. This podcast comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com. And, of course, if you're not subscribing, please do that. Also, we would really appreciate it if you would rate and review the show. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the AmeriPort podcast that comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
You know, just because you're a starter in the league doesn't mean you get a starter grade. And let me say this. You go and look and study all the depth charts with all the grades that I've given them. Look at the people. And this is why I do it this way. Go and look at the people that have backup defensive linemen or offensive linemen with a purple grade. They're starting caliber players, but they're not starting on the team. See, that's when you really start to see who has good personnel and who doesn't. You can see the number of blue grades, the number of red grades, the number of purple grades, and the number of orange grades, and the number of green grades. And you see what those all mean. And you immediately can say, some good young players. A lot of quality starters. Not a lot of, you know, elite players. You know, hey, a lot of elite players, but boy, they're missing some other spots. They're really strong here, really weak here. That's why we do it that way.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.